Well, all right, everyone. It sounds like it's time to get started, so let's go ahead and move along. You successfully navigated to the last day, the next to last session at TechEd, so thank you for hanging in there. I do realize there's a 4:30 session as well, but I'm glad I'm not that speaker. There's only 20 of you in here now, and maybe it's more than that. So you can each have your own row if you wish to. But I'm going to be doing everything up here, so the closer you are, the better you're going to be able to see and hear, and I don't spit that far, so you're in good shape. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Wally Mead. I'm a senior program manager with the product group. I've been with Microsoft for 21 years and been doing the SMS / configuration manager thing for 19 of those 21 years. So been around for a long time and worked on all the different versions of the product. This presentation is on what are we doing in the hierarchy in Configuration Manager 2012 to help reduce the number of sites that you have to have in your infrastructure, from the ConfigMan 2007 days into the 2012 era, and what are we doing to make it even better for you going forwards as we move along into the 2012 R2 release. So just to, first question is, since it's the next to last session of the last day of TechEd, how many of you want to have fun? Okay, go to Hall 7-6, they're having fun over there. No fun in this room, so I'm sorry about that. So to start off with, I want to level set to see where we're at so I know how to tailor the presentation. How many of you are running ConfigMan 2012 SP1 in production? Over half of you. 2012 RTM. Anybody? A couple of you? 2007 yet? Okay, a bunch of 2007. So, okay, good, good. So I guess I need to cover everything because you guys are hitting all every feature. So you guys have seen this slide, so I'm going to breeze through these first three marketing type slides. Users want to work from anywhere and get access to their, on whatever device they want to use. They want to get access to their corporate applications to do their work and get access to your corporate data. So you've seen this. I'm not going to dwell on this. You can go listen to other recordings to hear more information about this. So what we're doing at Configuration Manager is we want to allow this people-centric IT, allowing end users the ability to roam around, pick the device of their choice, have the appropriate applications that they need to do their job, gaining access to your corporate data. You as IT down at the bottom, you need to manage those. You need to provide the appropriate access for those users and those devices to the apps and data that they need to have access to. And you need to protect your environment so that corporate data is secure, so that you're not being compromised when a device is lost. So what we're doing is empowering users to roam around, but more importantly now, to pick the device they want to use. So not just a laptop or just not a Windows desktop that you might provision them. When I started with Microsoft 21 years ago, I was given a desktop system. I didn't have a choice. I was given a specific model of computer. I was given the appropriate OS, whether it was, I don't know, Windows 3.0 or 3.1 back then, whatever it was. And I was given whatever version of Office we had back then, and I was stuck with it pretty well. I got to install a few optional apps, but for the most part, I had that. As we relaxed and grew, then we now get a hardware refresh every 3 years. We might get a half dozen models of laptops we get to pick from, and maybe a few different desktops we can pick from. So get a little more choice on the computer we want to use, but still it's running Windows 8 or 8.1 preview now, and appropriate corporate applications. Well, now you guys are bringing your iPads in, your iPhones in, your Android, your Windows Phone 8, your RTs, and you want to use those to gain access to the corporate network. So we have to empower users to do that. The next slide will show you our big complicated slide that shows the on-premise configuration manager infrastructure with the Windows Intune infrastructure. We're trying to unify that so that it's not a complicated process for you to be able to manage these users using whatever device they want to use. And then giving you some of the tools that you need and the policies to help you protect your data. Those of you in the back, come on up front. We're having all the fun up front. In the back, you're going to hear nothing. You're going to see nothing. So, all right. And you've seen this slide. So we have, obviously, our configuration manager infrastructure with the single pane of glass, as we call it, the admin console with the administrator. You have the on-premise configuration manager environment at the top. You have the cloud-based service if you need to manage the mobile devices and the Windows RT devices. And then all the different platforms and models of systems that we can manage. Now, these are the user-centric slides. You don't see the Linux, Unix on there, because those are server-based operating systems that we manage and not really targeted to the user audience. But for the infrastructure environment, yes, we do manage Linux, There you go, Adrian Sterling on his red hat. So we manage the Linux and Unix environments as well. So what we're giving you is that single pane of glass, so one admin can use one console to manage that entire infrastructure. So trying to keep things as easy and simple as possible for you. Okay, so that's the background stuff that you guys have heard numerous times. For this session, what we're going to jump into and spend all of our time on is what we call hierarchy simplification. What have we done in the Configuration Manager product group to help reduce the complexity of the environments that you may have there today, how you can reduce the number of servers, the number of sites, which is goodness for everybody, and make your lives a whole lot easier. So we'll talk about that a lot. We'll talk about some improvements in content management, which helps in this hierarchy simplification. We'll talk about some improvements in reporting. Maybe not necessarily what you're experiencing today, but what you're going to experience with the R2 product. Have some great benefits there. But we'll look at those. So if you look at that left side, it's kind of a diagram of one of our corporate customers. So this was their ConfigMan 2007 environment. Central side, multiple tiers of primary sites, and finally get down to secondary sites down at the very bottom. So lots and lots of sites in there. I know one customer we had in the United States had, 17,000 sites in a hierarchy. Almost all of them were secondary sites because it was an insurance agent. They put in a secondary site in each insurance agent's office. So really, really bad. But that's all we had back in the old SMS 2.0 days. Now that thing is way smaller. So that's what one of our corporate customers looked like in the 2007 days. If you look at the right-hand side, these are some of the improvements that we talked about last year in Amsterdam and the year before in Berlin and so on that we've done to the product, ConfigMan 2012, to make your lives easier to reduce your hierarchies. So SQL global replication. So now your administrative objects are at every site you have. So you don't have to have as many sites out there to be worried about decentralized administration. I got to administer over there. I got to have a different site because all my data is everywhere. So it's all there. You may not be able to see it because of the granular role-based security in the third bullet down, but we have the data everywhere. So it helps improve your ability of administration from anywhere you need to go. Support for multiple domain-based site roles. So we give you the option of having multiple distribution points, 250 per site. Multiple management points, 10 per site. With SP1, we've added in multiple software update points, 8 per site. So we give you the ability of spreading out your load from having that one central location out to multiple remote locations as necessary, supporting those multi-force scenarios that you might have. One of the biggest things we did was the role-based administration changes from the old class and incident security rights in the old ConfigMan 2007 days to now the security roles with security scopes assigned to a user, granting those users the appropriate collections they need to use, and controlling what they can see in the console. Because of that top bullet, the data is everywhere. Every single site has the same data in it for the most part. Now, hardware inventory type stuff, not, but all your administrative objects, your packages, your applications, your collections, and so on, is everywhere. You need to secure that, and that's with the role-based administration. So great technologies there. So helping you to reduce the number of sites you have in your infrastructure, which is great. Less complexity, fewer pieces of hardware you have to have, which is money, fewer OS licenses, which is money, fewer SQL Server licenses, fewer ConfigMan Server licenses, which is all saving money for you and on your infrastructure. So this is how that environment changed when we implemented 2012. So we went from that to that. So did quite a reduction of the number of sites in there based on those factors we talked about before. Well, not only there, when you get into Service Pack 1, we've added some things in Service Pack 1 that have actually helped reduce that environment as well. So we give you the site expansion option, which I'll talk about in this presentation. The ability of migrating not just from 2007, which some of you are still yet to do, but the ability of migrating from one 2012 SP1 site to another ConfigMan 2012 SP1 site. So great technology there without having to recreate all your objects. I already mentioned the multiple software update points. A couple of things we're adding in ConfigMan 2012 R2 to help reduce your infrastructure, multiple network access accounts. So one of the scenarios we have today where people have to have multiple primary sites is when you have untrusted forest or you have work group scenarios. In those type of environments, your logged on user account, your computer account, probably is not able to access your distribution points. So you have to use this thing called a network access account. Well, you only got one per primary site. So all your clients have to use that one network access account. If you have multiple different untrusted forests of clients, that's not going to work very well. So you have to have a different network access account for that untrusted forest, which means another primary site. So what we're introducing in the R2 release is the ability of assigning multiple network access accounts per site. So now I can put a DP in that remote untrusted forest and assign a network access account that would be valid for that DP in that untrusted forest. So those clients can go ahead and use that resource. And our reports now are role-based, just like the console is. So what we've had in the past with the current product is you're limited in the console to what you can see in collections with scopes and so on. But in the reports, if the report was scoped to all systems, you could still see all clients there, even though in the console you might only see a collection of desktop computers. Now our reports will show what's in the console. So they're tied to the collections you have access to. And I'll show you that in our demo. So because of some of those changes, we're going to reduce the infrastructure even more. So getting down to hopefully a single primary site with multiple distribution points in other site systems and not even have multiple sites. So site expansion was added to the ConfigMan 2012 SP1 product. So how many of you guys have a hierarchy with more than one primary site? Don't be shy. You can raise your hands. We're not going to throw anything at you. That's fine. Okay. So a number of you do. And how many of those were 2012? 2012 with more than one primary site? Okay, a handful. A much smaller number, which is good, which is what we want. A lot of times in the RTM product, what we would find is people were afraid of not having accounts. Because if you went through setup in our setup phase, which I'll show you later on, if you chose primary site, we would ask you, do you want to join a hierarchy now? Where's your CAS? Or do you want to be a standalone, which we popped up a warning saying you'll never be able to join a hierarchy in the future. So people got afraid of that, so they'd go ahead and install a CAS, even they only needed one primary site. So they had the ability of expanding to another primary site in the future. So they would do that even though they didn't need to. So again, more hardware, more server licenses, OS licenses, and so on. That's taxing on your infrastructure to do all that global replication, even if it's only between those two sites. So what we added in Service Pack 1 is the ability of having a standalone primary site. And now you go to the point where you really do need a second primary site. And you want to have consolidated reporting and administration, so you need a CAS. So now you can take that standalone primary site and move. There you go. And you can expand that into a hierarchy. So you can, after the fact, you can install a brand new CAS and have that primary site connect to the CAS, or really the CAS connect to the primary site, creating a hierarchy out of it. And it will go ahead and do all the global and site data initialization that's required, just as if you install the CAS first and then install that primary site underneath the CAS after the fact. So very, very cool capability. It lets you start with where we want you to be, which is standalone primary, and then if you need to, and our primary reason for needing more than one primary is scalability, more than 100,000 clients, you can then expand out as necessary. Now, the caveat here is that this is a one-time for one primary site. So if I have a primary site today, standalone, I merge with another company that has a standalone primary site, I can create a hierarchy, but only out of one of those two primary sites. So I can expand one of those two, probably my larger site, the one with more clients, more objects that I want to maintain, expand it into the hierarchy. What I'd have to do for the company I'm merging with or acquiring, I would then have to do a migration process. Now here, once I've got my hierarchy set up, I can go ahead and install another primary site. And I can expand out up to 25 primary sites in a hierarchy. But if I needed to do a migration scenario, I could then go migrate between those two sites. And I'll show you that I think it's the next slide. So a couple of caveats after expansion. Just be aware of the fact that when you do run through the expansion process, you're going to see a spike in some activity. You're going to have some software update synchronization that has to occur, which is generate a lot of traffic there. You have to synchronize your software update catalog, so that metadata. Your original primary site is going to have twice as many boot images, because each site has a x86 boot image and an x64 boot image. Well, your CAS has an x86 and an x64 boot image. That's going to replicate down. So your primary site will now have four boot images, the two from the CAS and the two that it originally had. And then any packages that you've already created, and not just packages, whether they're packages and programs, whether they're applications, whether they're software update packages, images, and so on, any of those things you already had down at the original primary site, when you do this expansion process, those objects will replicate up, the metadata objects will replicate up to the CAS, but the owning site is still the child primary site, which means if you go up to the CAS and you make a change to that package, that content, that change is going to replicate down to the primary site. It's going to go out there and update the distribution points and so on, not the CAS. Okay, so a quick comparison between 2007 and 2012 for the site attach versus site expansion. In 2007, you had great flexibility. I could have two primary sites that were standalone. Hey, I want to have a hierarchy. I just pick and choose which one I want to be the central site. I attach the other one to it. Very simple. Oh, I don't want that guy to be the central site anymore. I detach from it, and I make somebody else the central site. Great ability of creating a hierarchy on the fly. You don't have that same capability, that same flexibility with ConfigMan 2012 Service Pack 1. So you have, during setup last year, brand new, standalone, or you're going to join a hierarchy. Can't modify it after the fact, other than if you're standalone, you can join a, you can create a brand new hierarchy out of that. Migration. So that merger acquisition scenario we'll talk about here and momentarily. There, in the old days, it would just attach that primary site from that other company you acquired, attach it to your hierarchy. Now it's going to be a migration process. Handling hierarchy changes, hopefully you don't have them. And if you do, we don't want to have as many sites as you used to have, so it's much reduced, not necessarily flexibility, but functionality that you need because we can handle more within a single environment now. And you don't have problematic attaches. It's one of the most common problems people had with 2007. Most of the CSS cases we had were the replication engine we had back then with the file-based replication, transferring files between sites. It didn't always work right. It was hard to troubleshoot. Now it's all this SQL Server-based replication to get the data up and down. And I'll show you how fairly simple that is in a moment. OK, so now I go ahead and do that expansion. I've got my site expanded into a hierarchy, but I acquired another company. So now what I would do is I would do a migration process from that new company I acquired into my existing environment. Take their collections, take their packages, take their applications, take their software update groups, task sequences, images, all the stuff I care about from their environment, and just migrate it over to my current infrastructure. Now, we always talk about this in the merger acquisition scenario, but it's also great for the lab to production scenario, because you all have labs that mirror exactly your production environments, and you guys never try something out in production without going to lab first. So you go to your lab environment, you build your collections, you build your deployments, you build your queries, all that, whatever it is. And in the old days, you had to go rebuild all that stuff in production. Now you just attach these two together through the migration process and migrate those task sequences, those images that you validated in lab, you migrate them directly over to production without having to change a thing. It's a very, very simple, easy process to go through. Migrate all the different objects you have that you create in your lab environment or this merging company, acquired company, over to your production environment. We can still migrate from ConfigMan 2007. So those of you that raised your hand when I asked about 2007, you can still migrate from there to ConfigMan 2012, RTM, SP1, as well as R2. Just that now, as of SP1, you can do 2012 SP1 to 2012 SP1. And again, including R2, when R2 becomes available to you, which it is, I know, in preview mode. Okay, so a couple of things we've added in R2 specifically. One of our goals in the product when we initially created it was to try and keep setup as simple as possible. So we tried to reduce as many wizard pages that you had to respond to in order for you to get the product set up. So you could get the install done as quickly as possible and have your site, you could start learning it, administering it, and so on. So what we would always do is we default our database locations to the default SQL Server location, program files, Microsoft SQL Server, data directory. And we dump the database file and the transaction log there. If you didn't want that, which is a best practice not to have that in your program files directory, because normally program files is where? Drive C. You don't want to put stuff on Drive C, because if you fill it up, what happens? That's bad stuff on your server. Your server stops working very well. And that's bad if it's a, you know, obviously a server that's doing some good stuff. So you want to have your database on some other drive. In fact, we tell you put your database on one drive, put your transaction log on a different drive, put Config Manager on a different drive. So the OS is doing nothing other than OS stuff. Well, we didn't give you that flexibility before. So you had to either pre-create your databases and put the transaction log wherever you wanted it, or after you installed us and you found out we put things in the default directory on drive C, then you would go ahead and move them post using SQL Server Management Studio, which is fine, because all we did, we just make calls to the SQL Server. Now we decided customer feedback is give us that flexibility during setup. So in R2, we're going to add one wizard page, and this will let you designate where you want the transaction log, where you want the database files to go. We'll default to the normal default directory and program files, but you just give it a different path for your SQL Server computer. So if you skip over this, it's going to be in the same place it would be today. But you do have the flexibility of changing that. Okay, let's do our first little demo. Push that magic button there, and there we go. Okay. Because of the length of time it takes to really do an expansion, I've pre-done some stuff, but I'm going to show you the process. So here's a site. This is R2 preview code, so the same code you guys can download now. And I've launched off the setup wizard. So you notice here it does say R2. And at the very top, it does say R2 preview. So it is the preview code. So same bits you guys can have access to. So I clicked install. Once you click install, it brings up the normal welcome page. Click next. Move that in the middle now. Hello. Maybe you went to sleep and not responding. Yeah, right. Right when I need him, he's not responding. He was responding earlier when you guys weren't here. So Friday, late in the day type scenario. There we go. Okay. So you guys have seen this before. Here's your I want to install a primary site, which is what we want you guys doing. You have to have primary sites, but that's really all you need to have. But if I have to expand my hierarchy, I want to go ahead and choose this option down here, install my CAS. So I'm going to expand by going install a CAS. I'm going to take the eval version of the product. If you have the license key, you can use the full version. That's fine. Accept your license agreements for the product, for SQL Express, which is for secondary sites, for SQL Native Client for clients, and for SilverLight for clients. You have to have your Redis files, different set of files than you had for SP1. So you have to download a new bundle of the Redis files. And just because this is going to take a couple of minutes to go through in my VMs, I've already got one started that's done that right here. So I've checked my 15 files. It pops up what server languages do you want? We no longer have different versions of the product in different languages. It's all neutral or Unicode, and you just pick which language packs you want the console to appear in. So I'll just take English. Same thing for clients. So no more ICPs for you guys. And now here's my site code. I'll say Tech Ed Europe. Tech Ed Madrid, R2 Preview, CAS. I'll leave my install directory to drive C program files, which is not a best practice. You really want to put Config Man in some other drive, but I only have one drive in my VM. Now here is where you make your choice. You saw this type of a screen when you were installing a primary site before. Is this going to be a standalone primary site, the bottom option, or is it going to be a joining a hierarchy? A CAS, the top option, for a primary site. So this is what was added as of SP1. I'm going to install as the first site in a hierarchy, the old RTM stuff. Set up my CAS first. Now I want to go ahead and expand into a hierarchy. So I'll choose that option. I now, instead of giving it the CAS name, because I'm installing a CAS, I give it my primary site server's name, which is primary1. Let me make sure I spelled that correctly. Yep. Click next. Hey, okay, it was able to attach to that primary site. All is good. It found a SQL server on my local computer. Default instance, default ports, default database name. I can change any of those I need to. Here's that screen for my database files. So the top one is your database file. The bottom is your transaction log. Go ahead and punch in the appropriate path. This is the local path on your SQL server computer. If it's a remote computer, you still say D colon and E colon, not double backslash computer. So I'll take the defaults because, again, I only have one drive. And where my SMS provider is, I'll leave it on the computer. And for the preview or beta, you can't opt out of the CEIP, so you can see it's hard-coded. And then say it's going to attach, and it goes through and runs through the prereq checker. So you're going to go run through the pre-req checker to make sure that I have the ability of now becoming a CAS and joining or expanding that primary site that I had below me that I pointed to, in this case, primary one. Now, in this case, it's going to come back with a couple of issues for me. And it tells me I have two errors. CAS machine account, I don't have admin rights, which is true. And check the existing standalone primary. My site I designated here, primary one, is not a standalone primary. It was a standalone primary last night. But then I went ahead and expanded to a CAS last night because it takes a half an hour or so to do so. And I want to show you the after effects. So that's why I have those two errors. Because I don't want to sit here and have you guys watch progress bar for 35 minutes while we install a new CAS. But you see what the process is. So I'll go ahead and kill this. And now I'll jump over to my primary site. So here's my primary site, primary one. And you can see the computer name here is primary one. And you see it is an active site. It's R2P is its site code. And it has it's now a child site. So this is the one I expanded last night. It was standalone primary. Now it's a child of a CAS. And you can verify, if you look way up here at the top, I use the eval version. You can see I installed this site 169 days ago. No, I have 169 days left. So I installed it last week when I was in, I don't remember which one of the locations I was in Europe. So I installed it last week. If I go look at my CAS, so switch over to my CAS image, you can see that I installed him last night. So no smoke and mirrors here. This is true stuff. If I go to my site hierarchy node, you'll see that CAS as a site is the parent of R2P, which is what my child primary site was. So it was a simple process. It just took a half an hour to complete it. That's why I pre-did so. Now, before you move on, and let me switch back to my slide for 1 second, and I'll come back over here. So you've got your one standalone primary site. You need to expand because of the fact you're going to acquire another company. So in this case, we're going to merge with two companies. Our total number of clients is going to be more than we support in a single site. It's going to be 120,000. We only support 100,000. So we have to create a hierarchy, multiple primaries. So we're going to go ahead and, what I just did in my demo, take that primary site and expand it out to a CAS. So that's what we just did in our demo. Now, before you start doing any work in this new hierarchy that you've created, what you want to validate is that your process is fully completed. Once we install the CAS and setup says it's all done, you're going to load the console, and you need to wait for the magic line up here that says link is active. So don't go doing anything in your environment until the link says active on both your new CAS and what used to be a standalone primary. So you want them both to say link active. It'll take a while for the global data replication and site data initialization to occur. So that's your key there, is make sure it says link active before you go doing any of the work. You can also verify at the very bottom, this is R2, but as of SP1, we added two new tabs down at the bottom of your preview pane, the initialization detail and replication detail tabs. You want to go to the initialization detail tab, and you can track what your replication status is. So we show you each of the different replication groups of data from SQL Server that have to be replicated up or down. We show you what the initialization status is, successful or failed, and what type of data it is. Let me just blow up that for you. So you want to make sure that all your replication groups say 100% and succeeded, and you don't care whether they're global or site data. Site data just means it's generated at the primary site. Global means it can be generated anywhere, and it replicates everywhere. Site data just goes from primary up to CAS, and that's where the only two places it resides by default. Okay, so once you've got that completed, so once you've gone in there and you've created that hierarchy by expanding, then you could go ahead and take this company you're acquiring, and you could migrate its objects from its standalone primary over to your new hierarchy you created. So let me show you that part of the acquisition process. So I'm on my CAS here, which is my brand new site I just created. And I have in my possession, sitting right here, this is a ConfigMan 2007 SP2 site server. And this is where half dozen or a dozen of you guys raise your hand with what I asked earlier. You're sitting here at ConfigMan 2007, hopefully Service Pack 2. Service Pack 2 is the only release that we support migration from. If you're Service Pack 1, you can't migrate. RTM, can't migrate. And certainly not SMS 2003. And I didn't ask any of you guys that. So I do have the proper version site. And I've got some objects I want to migrate over. I've got some collections I want to migrate over. I've got some packages I want to migrate over. Software update stuff, task sequences, configuration items, all these different objects that my old environment that I've been administering for years, I have, and I want to migrate those over. So the migration process gives you the ability of what we call cherry picking, picking those items you really care about and migrating them over from old infrastructure to new infrastructure. You don't have to take everything. You probably got a lot of garbage in there that you don't care about, just because your admins haven't deleted the old packages, haven't deleted the old advertisements, haven't cleaned up the old task sequences for Windows XP, which you're not deploying anymore. So you now can do that with the migration process. So the migration process is you go to your central administration site, go to the administration workspace, you go to the migration node, and the migration node says, I don't know nothing. I have no source hierarchy, I have no objects I can migrate, I got no clients I can migrate. You have to configure it to do this migration. So we go and specify our source hierarchy. So up in the ribbon, we'll do a specify source hierarchy. So we're going to take that action. And here I specify my top level ConfigMan 2007 site server. Or if I'm merging with another company running ConfigMan 2012 SP1, that would be their standalone primary or their central administration site. My case is 2007, so it's SMS server is my computer name. Now we need an account that allows us to access SMS provider as well as SQL Server. So what we do is we query from the new site, from the old site, from WMI, SMS provider, and SQL Server to find out what objects they have available for us to migrate. So you need an account that will be allowing the access to those two resources at the originating site. So I'm going to go ahead and specify set, new account, and the account name is SMS domain, and then administrator. Password is a secret password you guys are never going to guess. I've supplied the password correctly twice. I want to verify that account, so I click verify. And the first thing we do is SMS provider, so I'll go to WMI, and we're going to go to the root namespace. Now, you have to know where your SMS provider is in your ConfigMan 2007 environment. In my case, it's on the site server computer. So I'm just going to go ahead and click test connection, and if all is good, I get back a message saying, yes, this account has access to the SMS provider on that computer going to that namespace, which is where we write all of our stuff, the root / SMS. So that's good. Now, I also have to get access to SQL Server. So SQL Server, it happens to be on the same computer. I'm using the default instance, not a named instance, but I can specify it. And I don't really care about the master database. I'm going to pull from Config Manager, which is SMS underscore site code, which is TST. And I'll say test connection, and my account worked for that as well. You can use different accounts for WMI and SQL Server if you want to. I'm going to use the same account, and my account works for both. And you can see the default here is use the same account for SQL Server access that you're using for the SMS provider, but I could give it different credentials. Then down at the bottom, got this checkbox, enable distribution point sharing. Allow my ConfigMan 2012 clients to gain access to content sitting on my ConfigMan 2007 distribution points, so I don't have to redistribute that content to a brand new DP in my new environment. So I'll go ahead and enable that checkbox. I click OK. Bingo, he goes off and does what we call a data discover process. We're now querying that old computer, the old server, WMI, and SQL Server to find out all the objects this site has which could be migrated over to our new infrastructure. This will take just a moment to run. I don't work specifically with Microsoft IT. One of our other guys does that. And he told me this process took 7 minutes for Microsoft IT. We manage 200,000 clients with Microsoft. It only took 7 minutes to do this data gathering process. So it's not going to take you guys hours to do this. Okay, we're all done. Now that we're done, our migration dashboard says, hey, I have a top-level site server. It's SMS server. It only has one primary site. So if we had a hierarchy, it'd say my central site was SMS server and how many primary sites were below it. I have 91 objects to migrate. And if I scroll off to the right, that site has 3 clients that need to be migrated over. So pretty puny in terms of what you guys have in your infrastructures. Just enough to give us some data here that we can go ahead and migrate. Okay, that's just the identification process. Now I want to start migrating over my data. So you expand the migration node, and you click on migration jobs. There aren't any by default. A migration job is the command process that says, go there, take this stuff, recreate it over here. So do the migration of these things. So I'll create a migration job. First thing down at the very bottom, there are 3 different types of migration jobs. Oops, sorry. You have collection migration. Take the collection of objects, move it over. Object migration, take this package, take this task sequence, take this OS image, take this software update list, migrate that over. And then objects modified after migration, I migrated some stuff, but migration's not a one-time shot. It doesn't happen overnight. It can take you a period of time to migrate because you're going to have both infrastructures running for a period of time. So you're going to still be administering your old ConfigMan 2007 infrastructure. So you might make changes to those collections you've already migrated or change the properties of a package. So that bottom job will allow you to find things that have been modified in your old infrastructure and re-migrate them over to your new infrastructure. So we're going to go ahead and take a collection migration, give it some logical name, collections. And now we're showing you a full list of all collections that we can migrate from the 2007 or that source site. So you notice that you recognize the names of most of these. These are all the default collections that come with ConfigMan 2007. We've recreated what we wanted to for collections in 2012 of those default ones, which is only a total of 7 collections out of that 14 or whatever it is there. I want to take these bottom 2 collections, so I'll take ConfigMan clients, and also if you notice, main building is a sub-collection, it has sub-collections. So I'm going to take these 4 collections here. Are the ones I'm interested in migrating. Then notice this checkbox down at the bottom, migrate objects associated with this collection. So that says find any objects targeted to these collections, advertisements, software update deployments, task sequences, configuration baselines, and so on, and allow me to migrate those as well. I could clear that checkbox and just take the migration of the collection definitions themselves. We also have in the upper right a box that is grayed out right now. It says view collections that cannot migrate. If there were any collections in my source site that I couldn't migrate, that button would be illuminated. I would click the button, it tells me the collection name and why I can't migrate it. Very commonly, it's because you have a single collection in 2007 that has a query for users and a query for devices, which is supported in 2007. It's not supported in 2012. You have to break that apart into 2 different collections. But we'll tell you the collections and the reason why. I don't have any, so I got the ones I want. I'll click Next. Now, this is showing me a listing of all the objects that are targeted to any one of those 4 collections. So now here's where I get to pick and choose what I want to migrate and what I don't. For example, I don't want to take this KB977384. If you guys think back in your dark resources of your memory, you might remember that. That was a hotfix to enable power management for ConfigMan 2007 R3. We don't need that hotfix anymore because it's built into ConfigMan 2012. So I don't need that deployment, which used to be called an advertisement, which means I also don't need that package. I don't want this configuration item. But notice we understand the relationship. If I don't take the configuration item, I can't take the configuration baseline, which says to deploy that configuration item. So we understand the relationships. So you pick and choose what you want, click Next. In this case, what site is going to own your content when you migrate it over? I'll say my primary site as opposed to the CAS, but it's whatever site's closest. Pick which security scope you want to assign these objects to, because everything in 2012 has to have a security scope. I don't have any queries with collection limiting issues. I don't have any queries with site codes that need to be replaced. If you had a query that said all clients in site code TST, well, TST is not going to exist anymore in the new environment, so you have to change that site code in the query. I don't have, so I want to save that information off to a file I can, or I can just view it now. And then I want to run the job right now. I don't want to migrate over objects that already exist in the 2012 environment, keep the new stuff instead of the old stuff. I want to transfer any admin-created folders that you might have created, and I'll disable any advertisements as they get brought over by default. Click next, and click close. And I've got this migration job. It says not started. It'll be started here automatically, momentarily. If you click on objects in job, it'll show you the object names and what the status of that migration is. If I click this and hit refresh, I'm sure some are done by now. When I click refresh, I'm sure some will be done by now or in process. Ah, come on. Or we're going to skip the rest of this demo. We'll come back. It'll migrate. It should be fairly quick here. There we go. So now we got some stuff's happening. So stuff is happening automatically for us, and things will happen. So we'll let that go. It takes it a moment, and we'll come back in the next demo, and we'll see what happened. So now we can do that migration. Once we've migrated the objects from the old 2007 site, or your merging site, you would uninstall it as a standalone primary. You would then reinstall it as a brand new primary site in your new hierarchy, and then it would get all of its objects back because of global data replication. So anything that got migrated to the CAS would come back down to that new primary site as well as your existing primary site. So you get all those objects back, just that they're now global data objects, so everybody has them. But now if we did that, we would have those 40,000 clients up there in one primary site and 80,000 in another. That's not exactly really load balanced in my environment. So then you would, again, uninstall the old site once you got everything migrated over. So what we give you now is a new admin console capability to allow you to reassign the primary site that clients are assigned to. So go back to this site where it has 40,000 in the new and 80,000. I want to have 60 in each. So I could take 20,000 clients, or whatever number I want, from my existing, my old primary site, and reassign it to the new primary site, directly from the admin console. No scripting you have to do, no advertisements you have to send out, no touching each of those 20,000 clients. You do it from the admin console. Very, very simple, easy process to run through. Now, a couple of things at the bottom. Support single or multi-select client reassignment. So I can multi-select 20,000 if I wanted to. You cannot take a collection of clients. We specifically block that just because a collection is kind of a drastic action. And it's too easy for you guys to accidentally pick a collection and then do reassign site. So we're going to make you multi-select the clients you want and then do the reassignment process. Because then you're manually selecting what you want and hopefully you're doing the right thing. It ensures proper client and site versioning, which means if I have a hierarchy with a R2 CAS, an R2 primary, and an SP1 primary, which we do support, we won't let you reassign clients from the SP1 site to the R2 site, because the SP1 site doesn't know anything about it. And we won't let you reassign R2 clients to an SP1 site, because you can't assign R2 clients to an SP1 site. So it would have to be between R2 and R2 in the same hierarchy, so under the same CAS. And it uses standard client policy process. So we're going to create a policy in R2, target that policy to those clients you multi-select and do reassign on, and so they have to retrieve that policy from their management point, which means you can't use this for disaster recovery. So if my primary site dies, I can't do this reassign to reassign its clients over to a working site, because we use the policy process and that primary site is down, so it can't create the policy. So clients won't be able to retrieve it from the database through the MP from the database. So the sites have to be working and proper versions. But it's a very great enhancement to help you with your environments. We already touched on the multiple network access accounts. So again, the scenario being you have multiple untrusted forests, you have multiple distribution points sitting in those untrusted forests, clients need an account credentials that they can use to access the DP, can't use their logged on user account, can't use their computer account, like in a workgroup scenario, you want to do OSD. So now you give the ability of having multiple network access accounts per site. And when we get to the next demo, I'll go ahead and show you those. Actually, we don't even have a demo. So we're going to create one real quick, on the fly demo. Value add, just for you guys for hanging in here on a late Friday afternoon. So if we do a refresh here, we'll see that this guy is all completed. So everything got migrated, except for one thing. It says skipped. It skipped this collection called main building. And you see it skipped it because of the reason that let me expand that out so you can read the reason. And it basically says this is a folder. It was an empty collection that was just a folder, basically used as a folder, and had sub-collections below it. Because it was an empty collection, we don't migrate it over. and I'll show you what we do here. So what we do with that guy is you go to Assets and Compliance, go to Device Collections. Here's the collection I migrated over, Config Manager Clients. Now remember, I had main building with floor one and floor two. So what we do for that scenario is I hit a refresh, and now I got this little expander by Device Collections. And now main building went from an empty collection to a folder, because we now support folders for collections, which is one of the primary reasons you guys use folders or use sub-collections in 2007 and previous releases. And now if I click that folder, there's my two collections I had inside of it, floor one and floor two. So they're root level collections basically inside a folder, treated just like any of the collections. There's no such concept of sub-collections anymore in 2012. So that concept's gone away. So those are the collections we created. We also migrated over a couple of packages, so CCM framework tools and DCM authoring tools. We migrated those two packages over. You can tell by looking at the, trying to go slow so you don't get seasick, by the package ID, TST, TST. That's the old ConfigMan 2007 site code. My current site code for R2 is R2P. R2 preview. We also, and I didn't show you this, remember we turned on that checkbox for distribution point sharing? So if I go to my source hierarchy, go way down to the bottom, there's another one of those tabs, shared distribution points. If I do shared DPs, oops, let me expand that out, sorry. So you can see the computer names. You can see I have two distribution points in my ConfigMan 2007 site. They're now shared and available to be used by ConfigMan 2012 clients. So any content that was there from packages I've migrated over, my 2012 clients can get from these DPs. We also give you the ability of upgrading. Basically upgrading a DP from a 2007 DP to a 2012 DP. Now in R2 it says eligible for reassignment. In 2012, it said eligible for upgrade. Basically, you're reassigning a DP from a 2007 site to a 2012 site. And you can see one of them can be upgraded or reassigned, and the other one can't. And the reason the one can't be because it's a primary site server. And we can't uninstall the primary site server. If it was a secondary site, we could, or a standalone DP, we could reassign it to a new site. Because of the fact that we've done the distribution point sharing, we also did migrate over some boundaries. So we migrated the boundaries. So this top level one, or the two in the middle. Yeah, the two in the middle there. So this IP address range here and this AD site came from ConfigMan 2007. Even though I didn't tell it to migrate boundaries, we have to have boundaries because we're doing DP sharing. So the 2012 clients have to know how to find the shared DPs. So we create those two boundaries, and then we create boundary groups for you for those two DPs, one for each one. And what we have inside of those, just real quickly before I move on, is we have the boundaries. You can see they're read-only, you can't modify them. And for the usage, site assignment is disabled, so you can't use this boundary for site assignment, but it does list the DP as a source, so I could get content from that DP. So that's really what the migration process is. You'll do multiple migration jobs to pick and choose which objects you want, migrate over different sets of collections at a time, and so on. But that's all the harder it is to do migration. And you can track this in the node. So here, if I go back and look, you'll now see on the objects migrated, it gives me status. I had 91 total, I've migrated 11, I've excluded 10, I've got 70 to go if I want to migrate all of them. So you get the color chart as well as the statistical data. And then as I take clients and I upgrade them from 2007 to 2012, that client on the right-hand side, that will change as well. Total number of clients, how many have been migrated, how many are left to be migrated. Okay, so that's the migration process. So now there's two other things I wanted to show you real quick. If I go to Assets and Compliance, go to my Devices node, here's all my devices. If I take one of these, like Client 8, notice up in the ribbon, I have an action there called reassign site. So all I have to do is multi-select the clients I want from one primary site and do a reassign, and it'll go to another primary site. The action's unavailable to me because I only have one R2 primary site. I'd have to have multiple R2 primary sites in the same hierarchy. So we'd filter out any SP1 child sites and any, obviously, sites that aren't in the same hierarchy. If I did have, when I click that option, it would drop down with a listing of what site do I want to assign to, and I pick and choose my site. And then the other thing we talked about was multiple network access accounts. If I go back to administration, go back to my site configuration, sites, go to my primary site, go to configure client component, site components, software distribution, and I can go to network access account, say yes, create one, I'll just say NAA, password. Oh, I don't. It's not an account. Okay, that's right. I did not pre-create that account. Tor. Let's try that. No, let's browse because I can't type, obviously. I didn't give the domain credentials, so I can create that one, and you can go create another one. And so I'll create a new one. I'll browse, and I'll do client install, and give it. Oops, that password is incorrect. And so you have multiple network access accounts. Notice you have the ability of moving them up and down. The reason for that is you want to put the most commonly used network access account at the top. The reason being, if you have a hierarchy with SP1 clients, they only know about one network access account. So we'll send them a policy with the top one in your list. So put the one you expect most clients to use top in your list so those old SP1 clients can gain access to it. George. Can use non-domain accounts as long as we can browse to it, or you can type it in. So you can type in whatever you want to. Yep. Yes. Yeah, so the question is, can you use non-domain accounts? Whatever you can type into that dialog box, you can go ahead and specify. Now, we're going to limit you to 10, or no, we're not going to limit you. We're only going to support 10 network access accounts per site. We're not going to block you from creating more than that. We're just going to test internally 10, so that's what we're going to support. It's just like the client push accounts. And you can go in here, create multiple client push accounts, and you can add multiple of those. We'll pick the top one on the list. We'll work our way through. Once we find one that works, we remember that one. That's the first one we try the next time, is what we call the best shot account. So we'll do the same thing for network access accounts. Okay. Let's go back over to our slides. Press the wrong button. There we go. Okay, upgrade. So you guys are at 2012 SP1. That's the only release we can upgrade from. You can only upgrade to ConfigMan 2012 R2 from ConfigMan 2012 SP1. There's no upgrade from 2007. You can do a migration. No upgrade from, thank you. I appreciate that. There's no upgrade from ConfigMan 2012 RTM. We only upgrade from 2012 SP1. It's an in-place upgrade, just like when you upgraded from 2012 RTM to 2012 SP1. Very, very simple process. You start at the top, work your way down. So start at your CAS first, then you work your way down to the primaries. The big difference is you don't have to immediately upgrade all your primaries like we told you to when you're going to SP1. And I'll talk about that on the next slide. The one caveat you're going to have is there's a new ADK. So when you went from RTM to SP1, you had to uninstall the wake and install the ADK for Windows 8. You now have to uninstall the Windows 8 ADK and install the Windows 8.1 ADK. The prereq checker in R2 will block you from installing or upgrading to R2 if you don't have the proper ADK. So it's got to be the ADK for Windows 8.1, which is available for you to download today as a preview as well, just like our code. So you deploy that. You can have SP1 clients assigned to your R2 site. That's fine. We support that. They obviously won't take advantage of any of the R2 features, like multiple network access accounts, the ability of being reassigned by the reassigned task, and so on. You always want to back up your database. You always want to run a test DB upgrade on your backup copy of your database so that you can verify you don't have any database connection, database issues. And then you just slap in the CD, DVD, the media, whatever it is, run upgrade as your option, answer the few questions like your license agreement, answer your redist files that you need, those client files, language packs, and then click, let it go through your prereq checker, verifying that you're prepared, and bingo, off you're running. We started our TAP deployments this week to have our TAP customers test out R2, And so they're going through this process as of this week. So they're going through it. In my lab environment, it takes about 35 minutes to upgrade from SP1 to R2. So it's not overly long. Now, my TAP customer, it took about 2 hours on their CAS. They had multiple sites feeding in. Each primary site was under an hour individually. So, and then you just upgrade your clients. So with Service Pack 1, we had this concept of interoperability mode. So what we told you is once you upgraded your CAS to SP1, you had to immediately upgrade your primary sites. The reason being, by default, everybody's good. Everybody's at RTM, so you can create an object anywhere, it replicates everywhere, everybody's happy. Now you upgrade your CAS to Service Pack 1, and you go into what's called interop mode. That's because of the fact that the schema is different between SP1 and RTM. So our CAS did not know how to block replication of objects down to a site that it was a different version. So we put you in interop mode, which basically said you can't create any objects until you get all your primary sites updated to the same version, SP1. Once you then upgraded your first primary site to SP1, upgraded your second primary site to SP1, you went from to out of interop mode, so now you can start creating new objects again. Well, in R2, our CAS is smarter now, so it knows that if I have a child site, come on, back up. Maybe I can't back up. Let me try a keyboard. Okay, so I've got one child site that's in R2, another child site that's in still SP1. What happens is you can create objects on either one of the two R2 sites, and they'll exchange data between themselves. But any R2 specific data will not replicate down to an SP1 site, like the multiple network access accounts or the reassigned site. Those won't replicate down. So we don't have this interop mode anymore. So you don't have to upgrade your primary sites as soon as you upgrade your CAS, like in the past. The recommendation is to do so. So you take advantage of those features, but you don't have to now. So we've got better interoperability stories. Okay. As of SP1, we added some replication control. So for those of you that raised your hand when I said you have a hierarchy in 2012, there are a few of you. We've added some things in there to help you control the traffic on your wire. So we added in replication compression. So by default, as SQL data is replicated between sites, we're going to compress that traffic. So on the originating site, we go through a compression process. We send it across the wire compressed. The receiving site uncompresses it and dumps it into SQL Server in the appropriate tables. That has saved, in our testing, about 70% of the network traffic. So great savings across the wire. And it's hit the CPUs about 10%. So the default is on for all links, but let's say I have an environment where I've got a really good link between two sites, but the child primary site has really old hardware. And I don't want to take that 10% CPU hit. So I can turn off replication compression on that one link, so don't hit that bottom level CPU, but because I got a good pipe between the two. But on for all my other ones that have better pipes and good hardware, I can leave replication turned on. So it's a site-by-site or link connection scenario. You can also change your SQL Server service broker ports. You can configure your retention period. That's how much data do I retain between changes in sites before I have to reinitialize everything. And the default is 5 days. So if a child site or a CAS goes offline for 3 days, when it comes back online, we can just replicate the changes between those two databases. If it's 6 days, we can't do that by default. You have to replicate everything, do a new reinitialization. So you can change that retention period if you want to. I'm a cruise ship, and I have primary sites on my cruise liners. And I know they're going to be offline because the satellite link is not very good. They're going to be out for 7 days. Well, I could decide to change that retention period to 8 days if I want to. Let them not do any replication during that time when the ship's out to sea. When it comes back in, they connect back up, and I can just do the changes for that 7-day time period. We won't let you go beyond 14 days, though, because once you get to 14 days, you're probably taking too much disk space for the changes as opposed to the time it would take to just do a reinitialization. You can also enable distributed views. So if you have very, very well connected sites, what distributed views will allow you to do is to not have your hardware inventory, your software inventory, your status messages, and so on, replicate from your child primary site up to the CAS. They remain at your child primary site. but you're thinking, wait a minute, my admin at the central site still needs a report on everything in my environment. Management wants to know all my assets. In that scenario at the CAS, when they try and run a report and the data's not there for a primary site, we'll connect up to SQL Server dynamically, query the data we need to render the report, and go ahead and display the report for the admin at the central site. But the data's not transferred to the central site's database and stored there. It remains down in the child primary sites. So you get to pick and choose which components you want to do that for. Now, there's a couple gotchas there at the bottom. It only works with a single provider on the CAS and only a single SRS at the CAS. Otherwise, you get into what's called a double hop authentication scenario, which is too complicated. So we're limiting you to single provider at the CAS and single SRS installation. We also have the ability of scheduling when you want that data to replicate. So maybe your link is pretty well saturated during the business hours with SAP data, client data, and so on, everything else. You don't want to have your hardware inventory and so on replicated up during business hours. So just like you can schedule transfers in the old days, the 2007, between sites, that 24/7 scheduling block, or you can do now at distribution points in 2012, you can do the same thing for replication of site data up to your CAS. And then lastly, link status, and I'll show you this stuff in the console. You guys may have seen issues where you go in there and look at your database replication node, and I showed you said link is active, where it goes to link is degraded. Then it might go to link failed. Then it comes back to link is degraded. Then it comes back to link active. Well, you're now allowed to control how long you want to wait before your link status changes between active to degraded and from degraded to failed. So you might know that you have some specific issues at specific times of the day where you want to go ahead and not have that link status change on you because you might have alerts being generated. So you can set the time period before those link alerts get generated for you. So let's go look at those in the console real quickly. Okay, so I'm still at my CAS. So if I go to the monitoring node, I go to database replication, you can see our link is active, which is what you want. We get the 100% initialization. You can also go down on the replication detail tab, and you can see the last date and time each of these different replication groups was sent from the parent, received at the child, sent from the child, received at the parent. So all the way across. You can see how frequently you replicate. It's either 1 minute or 5 minute intervals. We replicate the data. Okay, so if you pick the link and you pick link properties, here's the first option you have here is this is distributed views. So I want to turn off hardware inventory uploading, software inventory, software metering, or status messages. Pick and choose which of those I don't want to forward from my child primary up to my central administration site. If you have this disabled like it is right now, if I do go and enable it, what will happen is we'll delete that data from the CAS. So if I turn on distributed views for hardware inventory, we're going to send a job up to the CAS. The CAS is going to delete all the hardware inventory that came from my child primary site. So it's not just an ongoing thing. It's a get rid of it now, and then from the future, no more replication. And you can turn it back on, off if you want to. Down at the bottom is your replication data or link status. So data summary, how often are we updating the link status in your display? Let's go to the schedule tab. On the schedule tab, you can see you have the 24/7 scheduling of when you want to have the link available. So if I want to say, I don't want to have hardware inventory going during business hours, so 8 a.m. to something like 5 p.m. Monday to Friday, I don't want hardware inventory to go. I can just do that. Just like you're doing for your primary, secondary sites in 2007 or your distribution points now in 2012. You can control that scheduling of when you want the data to be replicated up. Alerts, here's how often you want to have your link status change. So by default, going from active to degraded is every 12 intervals. And the interval is at either 1 or 5 minutes we saw before. It depends on the replication group. And then from degraded to failed, it's 24 of those intervals. So you can change those values if you want to. And then at the top is, when do I generate an alert? After the link's been down or in a failed state for 30 minutes or more, I'll go ahead and generate an alert. Okay, so that's those. If I go look at the parent site database, go to the database node, here's where I can change my SQL Server service broker port, 4022 by default. I can enable or disable compression. And you see by default, compression is turned on. So realistically, what you do is turn it off if you didn't want it. And then what's my retention period? The default is 5 days. You go configure all those on the database properties as opposed to the link properties. Okay, so that's it for that one. We got 10 minutes left. I got some good stuff I want to show you in those last 10 minutes. So some other things to help reduce your infrastructure. Pull distribution points. A pull distribution point is something we added in the 2012 SP1 product. A pull DP is very similar to what a branch DP was in ConfigMan 2007. So if you're familiar with what a branch DP was, you have a real good handle on what a pull DP is. Traditionally, with a standard DP, when you take a piece of content, a OS image file, a boot image file, a software update package, application, package, whatever it is, and you distribute it to a DP, the site server immediately makes a connection to that DP and pushes that content over the wire to that DP. Now, with 2012, you can schedule when that occurs, so it may not be immediately. But it's a site server initiating the traffic and controlling that traffic down to that remote DP. With a pull DP, it's the opposite direction. When you add a pull DP to some content, we send a request down to that DP saying, you need to access this content. And the pull DP will go ahead and pull that from some source on their own. So it's a process initiated from the pull DP and not the site server. Because of that, it helps offload some of the processing by the site server, which helps lessen the burden on the site server end of things. So here's a visual representation. So you have your site server on the far left-hand side. You have to have at least one source DP, which is a regular DP, a regular DP where I put my content to initially. And then you set up your pull DPs to say, I want to pull from some source DP. Now, you can have pull DPs daisy chaining from each other. So you have one pull DP get the information from the source, and another pull DP pull from the other pull DP. So you can have those four DPs actually in one big long line, so a chain. So in this case, you have all four going to the one source DP, but it doesn't have to be that way. So the push process would occur from the site server to your normal DP, your standard DP. The other ones, these four, they're initiating the download from that pull DP over bits and HTTP, as opposed to the push traffic is SMB. It does not use the client framework like a branch DP did. That's the one big change here. It uses the distribution point framework, distribution manager, to do the transfer, as opposed to the client framework. The pull DPs don't have to have a client in most cases, unless you're using SSL. If you're going to HTTPS and we need the client there to get the client certificate to use to access your source. Another type of DP we added in Service Pack 1 was a cloud DP. A cloud DP, if you've gotten any of the presentations this week where we talked about the unified device management scenario, integrating Windows Intune with Configuration Manager, they showed you that manage.microsoft.com DP that gets created. That's a specific one up in Azure for Windows Intune. You can create your own cloud-based DPs in Windows Azure that you get to control the usage of. You get to control which clients on your intranet can utilize that cloud DP, and we use that cloud DP as kind of a fallback. When I can't find an intranet or on-premise-based DP with my content, I can fall back to this cloud-based DP. So it saves you from having to provision the box, maintain the box, get it patched, and so on. It looks just like a regular DP as far as you're concerned. You distribute content to it. You monitor it in the status the same way. It just happens to be residing up in the cloud. So it's a subscription service that you'd pay for the distribution point. Now, what we've done in R2 is a number of different things. In SP1, the pull DP's status back to the site server saying, yes, I got that content, was not exactly always reliable or as accurate as we wanted it to be. So we've made a lot of improvements in the status responsiveness from pull DPs into your infrastructure so they act more like standard DPs in that regard. You can now have cancel and redistribute options. So how many times, I won't embarrass you by asking if you've done this, but how many times have you gone in there and, oops, I didn't mean to put that DP with that content, and now you're always asking, how do I stop that distribution? And there's no real way to do that. Now you can right-click and cancel that process that's in progress. Or, oops, it failed. Oh, it was a hard drive disk space issue. Let me go ahead and fix that. I want to redistribute right now. You can right-click and say redistribute instead of waiting for us to do it on our own. PolDP improvements, we've made some changes in how they interact with the site server. So that's going to allow us to have greater scalability numbers. Today, you're limited to 250 DPs per site. With R2, we're going to expand that number. Standard DPs, probably still at 250. But PolDPs, it's going to be much higher than that. More on the order of what we do with branch DPs today. So branch DPs, we let you have 2,000 branch DPs per primary site. So we're hoping we'll be able to get our scalability to those type of numbers. We don't have the final numbers yet, but it's going to be much larger than the 250 we have today. We also let you change the source order of them. So back here, when I had my poll DPs, they have a source. A poll DP might have multiple sources. And in SP1, that's we randomly pick which source we want to pull from. Well, with R2, you can order the sources you want to go to. Go to this one because it's fastest. So try that one first. If he's too busy, not online or whatever, then go to DP number 2 to go ahead and pull from. So you get some ability of controlling that. You can migrate branch DPs directly over to poll DPs because they're kind of the same thing. In the current product, you can migrate branch DPs over to ConfigMan 2012, but they become standard DPs. You then have to go convert them into a branch DP, or excuse me, a poll DP. Now you can take a branch DP and directly tell it to become a poll DP in 2012 R2. Content improvements, we have better optimization for superseded updates, so superseded applications and the differences in the apps and doing delta downloads for those. Content distributions, one of the cool things we're doing there is that today if you have 100 DPs, and you say, take this content and distribute, we randomly pick the DP we start with. Well, if we pick a really slow DP, you've got to wait for us to distribute to that slow DP, and then it'll go to the next DP, and so on. In R2, what we're going to do, as we distribute to those 100 DPs, we're going to see how long it took us to distribute to those DPs. We're then going to rank them fastest to slowest. Next distribution, we're going to start with the fastest one and work our way down to the slowest one. So you're not bottlenecked by a slow DP. And we'll track this on a per distribution basis. So let's say one time your DP is really fast. Next time you distribute, we try him first, and there's a network link issue going to that site, congestion, whatever it is. So it's really, really slow. We're going to drop him down the list to a slow DP. Well, next time you distribute, he'll be down lower in the list. It's fast again. We'll move him back up in the list. So great capabilities there. And lastly, one thing that people have been asking for a number of years, how do I know how many clients are using each DP? Do I have enough DPs? Are my DPs in the right spot? Now we have a distribution point usage report you can run to see how many clients are accessing each DP you have. Here's a screenshot of what that report would look like. It just tells you which DP you want to look at, and it shows you on a per-day basis which clients, or not which clients, how many clients and how much transfers you had from that DP. So now you can analyze all your distribution points. Wow, that DP over in that subnet's way overloaded. This DP over here is not. Or maybe I don't have a DP over in the subnet where my clients are. Maybe I need to add a new DP over there. So local content source. And we also have some replication traffic reports in SP1. And here's a screenshot of just the reports we have in SP1. Here's a screenshot. This came from internal Microsoft IT. You see, here's a chart of replication traffic in graph form as well as tabular form at the bottom. Another chart in pie chart format. So again, you see the type of data that's being replicated between your sites in graphical as well as tabular form. And then lastly, there's two more things. Role-based administration. So role-based administration reporting. The big thing here is that your reports should show the exact same stuff as your console now, which was not the case in 2012 and 2012 SP1. So we're going to make your environment be much more easy to really control now with role-based administration. So that can help you reduce the number of primary sites again. You notice in the real small text there, there's functions. You'll be able to modify your own custom reports to do this role-based administration as well. So we'll have a function for you that you can go ahead and implement for that. Let me go ahead and show you that in a demo. Let me go over to my primary site because I don't have a reporting point, services point up at my CAS yet. So here's my primary site. Just quickly, I'll show you security. I have three administrative users. Let me go ahead and add on collections here so you can see that better. Okay. So I have three administrative users. I have full administrator, the top guy. Full administrator role, I get access to all collections. Then I have a desktop admin who is only application administrator, but he has access to all collections. And then I have a server administrator who's a full administrator like I am, but he only has access to one collection. So let's go ahead and let's launch the console in the context of the desktop admin. So we'll launch as a different user. We'll say desktop admin. My password, oops, I guess I misspelled it. Desktop admin. I can't even guess my own secret password. How do you spell secret? S-E, no. There we go. Okay, so I'm logging on as a desktop admin, only has role as application administrator, but has all collections. So I go to my collections here, I see everything, including my migrated collections. But if I want to go run that report, all right, let me go run the report as a full administrator first. So the report, I want to see how many clients I have. So I'm going to go to client information, and I'm going to go ahead and say count of clients for each site. I run that report. Now let him run that report. It'll take him a moment to run. I should have pre-ran the report for you, sorry. It takes a moment to run. But I can see all systems. I can show my members, and I can see all 12 computers I have. I have three clients. So 12 computers, three clients. Still rendering the report. Okay. I apologize. I forgot to preload that report for you. Okay, now let's load the console in the context of the server administrator. Oh, before I do that, notice there's no asset intelligence, there's no endpoint protection, there's no compliance settings, there's no user state migration data, no software metering, because I'm an application administrator. I don't need to see that stuff. If I go to software library, I don't see software updates, I don't see OSD, operating systems. Application administrator doesn't need to see that. But I can see my applications, which I don't think I have any here. Oh, yeah, the toolkit. And then the other things I migrated over and had, I can see all those. Now, if I load the context of the full administrator, but scope down to a different set of collections, server, admin. Okay, so this is my server administrator. He's got full administrator rights, just like I do. But if I go to collections, the only collection I gave him was all servers. Notice it says five members. If I show those five members, he has five computers that he can work with, he can administer. Now let's go look at that report. So I'm logged on as full administrator, all collections. Notice it says three clients in my site. If I go and expand that, it'll show me those three clients, client one, client eight, primary one. Full administrator, I see everything. Let's go ahead and launch this report as the desktop admin. The desktop admin has all collections. Primary one reports. I'll say desktop admin. He's got all collections. Let's run that report. He can't even run the report because as a desktop admin, he didn't see that report group. So you already have that in the console today. You only see what reports your security roles give you access to. But if I did have access to that report, I'd be able to see everything. So I already have that a little bit today. So that's role-based administration to the reports, not from the reports. Now let's go ahead and run a server administrator. Remember, it sees these five computers here. Primary one, server admin, password. I'm full administrator. So I can see all the reports. Go to client information. I want count of clients for each site. Remember, my full admin said it had three clients. This one only says one. And I just told you that you should see the exact same thing in reports as you see in the console. Where here it sees one client. It's called primary one. But in the console, he sees five computers. The difference being this is all computers, not just clients. If you look at the clients, there's only one client. So the report is just on clients as opposed to all resources. So if my collection was clients that are servers, I would see the exact same thing. So your reports now are scoped the exact same way your admin console is as far as which object you can see based on your collections. So very, very cool, something that's been asked for ever since 2012 came out with this role-based administration. And now we have it with R2. And again, you'll be able to modify your own custom reports to do the same functionality. Okay, last thing I have to talk about here, then we'll cut you loose. I know I'm over time, but there's no other sessions in this room, so we're good. Secondary site recovery. So as you're working with your secondary sites, and again, our goal is that you don't have secondary sites either. Our goal is that every customer worldwide has a single primary site. Now, we know that's not going to be possible because some of you have larger than 100,000 clients. We only support 100,000. We have customers that have 300,000, 400,000 plus clients, so they have to have a CAS and multiple primaries. But we want you to reduce secondary sites by putting distribution points, remote MPs, remote software update points out there. But if you have secondary sites and a secondary site fails, it's an easy recovery process now. So basically, you just prepare a new secondary site with all the hardware, prepare your secondary site just if it's a brand new install. And then we go ahead and you'll lose the content that was on that DP on the site server, but any remote DPs you had, that content will still remain in place. And then you could use pre-staged content to get the content back out to your secondary site server with this distribution point itself. And we'll try, and if it's an OS issue, we'll try and recover the content library if we can. So here's just a screenshot. You see the highlighted box at the top, recover secondary site. So just from the admin console, you pick your secondary site, click it, recover secondary site, and bingo, away we go. We go up there and do our work of trying to do as much recovery as we can for that. So anyway, again, I'm out of time. So hopefully you got to see some cool things that are in SP1 and hopefully get you guys off of the 2007 product over to ConfigMan 2012. And hopefully you saw some cool things in the R2 stuff that'll help reduce your hierarchies. So you want to get everybody as flat as possible. Hopefully no CAS, a single primary site. Some people still need to have a secondary site out there for DP scalability, but with the new changes in R2 and be able to have multiple more times of pull DPs, hopefully we can reduce that need for secondary sites as well. So really they're there for that, managing that client traffic going up to your source primary site. But you want to reduce your hierarchy as much as you can, reduce the number of servers that you have to manage, and reduce your infrastructure costs on the wire by doing that replication. And you've seen some of the new changes in R2 to help you out with the role-based administration and multiple network access accounts. With that, we'll turn off the mic and so on. If you guys have questions, come on up here and ask your questions. I'll hang around as long as you need. I don't go out till tomorrow morning, so I've got plenty of time to answer questions that you have. So come on up and ask any questions. Other than that, if you're headed out, have safe journeys back home. Hopefully you enjoyed your week here in Madrid. And if you're going to the next session, you've got some time. You've got 23 minutes to get to your next session before it starts up. But hopefully you had a great week, and thanks for coming, guys. Appreciate it.